Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند این ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
I invite you to listen to a short part of Chapter 9 of the book Sirr-us-Salat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. General Secrets and Disciplines of the Adhan and Iqamah. Muhammad Muslim said, when you recite Iqamah and Iqamah twice, two rows of angels will perform the Salah behind you. There are many other traditions to the same effect, some of which say that the length of each row is the distance between the east and the west, and the length of the shortest is between the heaven and the earth. The difference among the narratives may be due to the difference among the knowledge and sincerity of the mystics and their prayers. The wayfarer has set up his powers in the presence and has somewhat advanced from multiplicity toward unity, magnifying the essence of the names or the names and the attributes. And it may be that the magnification of the essence and the names implies the magnification of the attributes and the acts.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we are with another program of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio, and I'm your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. In one of his statements, Imam Khomeini says that, take note that the President of the Republic and Majlis representatives come from classes who have felt the deprivation of the oppressed and are concerned with their welfare and are not of the capitalist, affluent and profligate individuals who are unable to understand the pains of deprivation and the sufferings of the hungry and barefooted. Now, this statement of Imam Khomeini is astonishing. It's an eye-opening statement for those who are going to the polls in order to give their votes to a person, a representative. They must know that Imam Khomeini also mentioned it, that when you look at the person who you are basically selecting and you're giving vote, that president who you're gonna elect, or maybe the representative of the parliament which you're gonna basically elect or you're gonna vote, remember that he must be from a class where he has experienced the deprivation of the oppressed ones.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
he had felt it. If he hasn't experienced it, he should be communicating with such people so he can feel what happens when there is a person who is barefooted. He must have felt how the lower class people are living. What are their needs? Because if such a person who socializes with such people, he will think about them. Otherwise, in the capitalist system, it's all about the investors. It's all about the people who have money.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about a very important topic in Nahj al-Balagha, which is regarding the charter of Islamic governance. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha has given some very important directions, some very important tenets that can be collected and they can be understood and they can be gathered from the various sermons that he has read and which he has given in various occasions. And from those we can try and understand what an Islamic government can be and what it has to be. According to Imam Ali alayhi salam, as we said in the previous session, there are certain divine norms, there are certain divine laws that govern the societies, and these are laws just like the laws of nature, and that they affect the total society, the growth, the progress, the degradation, the progress and the regress of the societies. All of these are governed by these laws, these divine norms that we call sunnatun ilahiyya. And in the previous session we mentioned that the society sometimes get progress, and the progress has a reason in societal senses, and also when they fall and when they stoop low, that's even is because of a reason. So Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us to stay away from those bad things and get hold of the good things that cause progress.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
according to Imam Ali alayhi salam, one of those factors that led, that we need to contemplate upon, and that caused the progress of various societies, was the issue of unity and staying away from disunity and fragmentedness. So Imam Ali alayhi salam says, for example, in this particular sermon, which is, as I said, it's the sermon called Qasi'ah, the sermon number 188 in Nahjul Balagha, he says, "Min al-ijtinab lil-furqati." When you want to see why communities progressed, why they became noble, why the doors of blessings were open for them, and the blessings were under their control, and why all these good things happened to them, you will notice one of the main factors was that they were united and they stayed away from all factors, all issues that led to their disunity and their fragmentedness in performing their actions and in being a society. So for example, here he says, "Min al-ijtinab lil-furqati wal-luzum lil-ulfati." That means Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling the people, oh Muslim Ummah, stay away from disunity. Stay away from anything that leads to this, to your fragmentedness. If, for instance, cursing and defaming and calling evil words or using bad words and bad mouthing some of the sanctities of the other sect is causing you to lose a united front, then you should avoid that. If, for instance, performing certain actions causes you to be divided, then avoid those actions. Of course, we don't mean that you leave your sect. If you, of course, everyone is a proof for the truth and veracity of their sect. No, you maintain your sect. But there are certain things that you can avoid to express. There might be many things in our hearts, but sometimes we decide not to express them because of certain political and social considerations. Here, especially Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us that make sure that you keep the society united, the Muslim Ummah united, by avoiding certain things that will cause them to be disunited. One of the main things that causes disunity, of course, are the egotistic desires and feelings, inshallah, that we'll discuss of shortly.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, when we say that staying away from disunity, we don't mean that all of us become one sect or leave all our beliefs and, you know, form a mixture of beliefs that includes everyone. No. Every sect maintains their own beliefs, but they can decide not to express certain aspects of their belief so as to maintain a united front and not to harm the feelings of the other side. And another thing is the desires of people. Sometimes the desires and the egos of people cause them to be selfish things, causes them to be driven by selfish motives. When they are driven by selfish motives, they ignore the selfless aim of the whole society. The society, when it is united, can in fact cause great change in the Ummah, can cause great change in the whole of the world. Then Imam Ali alayhi salam goes on to say, وَالْلُزُومِ لِلْأُلْفَةِ. And by keeping and getting hold of togetherness and closeness and warmth between each other. The word uses ulfa. Ulfa means to be close to one another, to have feelings for one another, to be warm with one another. So Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying that all of you Muslims, wherever you are, whether you are a Bangladeshi or you are a North American or you are someone in the Aboriginal lands, or you are in Africa, wherever you are, if you are a Muslim, then you are one, then we love you. You are respectable for us. Of course, for human beings it's the same, but for Muslims, because of that high level, because of that belief that they have, that connection also is there. Anyways, inshallah, we will talk about this issue of being close together at greater depth in the session to come. Let's pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He helps us avoid all those things that cause us to break our united front and be fragmented. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts, works, and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Brother Ali Alevian. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Brother Ali Alevian, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me here.
So June 18, 2021 was the day of presidential election in Iran, and the people participated in this election. So one of the interesting points, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, about the presidential election is that when the president is elected by the direct vote of the people, he has to go to the rahbar and be confirmed. I mean the ijaza, and the leader Ayatollah Khamenei has to approve and confirm this president. What are the criteria, brother? I mean, in order to for the people to know that this president is in the same line with the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, what criteria must they be looking for? What are they?
Look, as much as we see that the actions that he's taking, look, he has already received the permission from the Wali al-Faqih,
yes,
to do his actions, and inshallah,
okay,
his actions will be in accordance to the Islamic laws and in line with whatever the leader of the Islamic Ummah decides. But for us, because we have appointed, we have elected a person that we are not sure that all of his decisions and actions will be in the same line.
Okay.
So as much as, based on our understanding, we find that he is going in that line, so it means that he is still actually following whatever the leader of the Islamic Ummah actually believes in. But since, in case he has any diversion from the goals, from the Islamic bases and principles, so it is the time that even people through their parliament, through the people that they have elected for the parliament, can bring him down from the power.
That's right.
So this, again, another mechanism has been defined in the system, that people, again, can come in between through their representatives to bring him down. But up until then, he is still the legitimate deputy of the leader.
And the cabinet is also very important. I mean, the president's cabinet also important, because the ministers that are chosen by him, you know, has to be introduced to the parliament in Islamic system, and then the parliament has to approve them through the votes that they are doing that, whether he is qualified enough in order to take, we can say, the ministership or not. And I think here and there we could see the interactions between different, powers in Iran. I mean, for leadership from one side to the executive power, to the, because the judiciary, and also the legislative power. And this makes the Islamic Republics of Iran very much beautiful, which is rooted in Islam, at the same time has the support of, what type of Islam are we looking for? Brother Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. I mean, because Islam has different views and viewpoints, but when we talk about Islam in the political scene of today's world, this president is going to do what? What type of Islam is he looking for?
Well, first of all, Islam does not have different viewpoints. Islam has one viewpoint.
Really?
And that is the...
We do not
the
God reality, brother.
That's because those who are interpreting the Islam,
okay,
those who are interpreting the history and the Quran, they are interpreting these things according to their own views. But Islam is what has come in the Quran. And, you know, the day Imam Khomeini, when he came, one of the journalists, he asked him, like, have you made a constitution for your country? Or how much time you need to make a constitution? He said the constitution was made 1,400 years ago, which was brought by the Prophet, and that is Quran. So the viewpoint is one. The worldview is one. And everything is within Islam. This is the beauty of Islam, that politics, the economics, the socialists, all those things are seen as one in Islam. These are the parts of Islam. This is within Islam. It's
okay.
Not separate. We are not secular. You know,
yes.
In the secular system.
This is important. That's right.
In the secular system, they see everything differently.
Yes.
Whereas Islam sees everything as one.
Mm-hmm.
A person who has become a president, he's
okay.
Responsible for the politics, for the economics, for the religious,
that's right.
You know, rituals of the people, in everything. He cannot just look at the political point of, you know, the society.
So we can see some Muslim lands today, they are Muslim in nature, but they're secular,
yes,
in the politics.
They are, most of the time. And the
okay. The
beauty about the Islamic Republic that you had said, like, what makes it significant, the thing that makes it significant is that in Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, what he basically he tried to do is to bring back the pure Muhammadan Islam, the system of the pure Muhammadan Islam back into this country, in this state,
okay,
so that the state can become an ideal for the rest of the Muslim world, for the Muslim states.
That's right.
For the rest of the world.
Okay.
And that's why we see that all these things are happening. And the main point which was said, which is Walayat al-Faqih, or the governance of the jurist, is because he is the representative of the Imam, or the authority of God upon all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been selected by other authorities of Imam, which are Mujtahideen, Maraji. Because obviously we have the narrations. I don't want to go towards the narrations that we have. So the system at this point that we have, where it has everything on its place, it's a role model, and we can see it's been only 40 years, and it will advance at this time. Obviously, there are different stages according to Supreme Leader. in order to make a state a pure Islamic state. And they're still working on it. They're still working on it. So as a whole, what I can say is basically the Islamic Republic of Iran is becoming an ideal and a path or you know, a project that can show the rest of the world how to implement the true Islamic, you know, politics and everything, or how to deal or how to run an Islamic state.
So many slogans, Brother Ali, have been chanted by different candidates before the election has been held. Now that the president is elected, these slogans are going to be implemented in the society. What are your suggestions for the new president of Iran, Brother, if he's going to implement what is chanted during the campaigns? And these campaigns, I think, and implementation of the slogans must be different from the secular system, because there is also a religious Shari'i part and Akhlaqi part here, isn't it?
Look, in an Islamic environment, when a person says something, he has to be actually loyal to whatever he said, and he has to keep his promise.
Okay.
In case they talked about, they gave a promise to the people, they should not forget it. And it, at least when they are asked again by people, should not at least should not deny it at least.
That's right.
Look, but as the same way that they wanted people's participation in the election, they have to be back again to people and ask for their participation and involvement in different issues in the country, even in the rank of the, let's say, managements and whatever they want these people for. So it's not good to say something to people and forget it after 3 months.
That's right.
In case you ask promise, you have to keep your promise and stay firm on what you have promised.
That's all right.
And you have to insist again, insist on the rule of law and rule of law in different aspects of the government. It's not good to promise something and ignore it while you are in power. And people definitely will not forget these things. And these are the actually the reasons that sometimes we see that rate of the participation comes down.
Oh.
And we see that people actually find this actually lies, if it's a good word to say, from the candidates. But they see that they have not been implemented and they have not been flourished at the time that they were expecting.
The participation very much.
They have to keep themselves responsible and responsive to the people who elected them. And it's not good to say something and ask them, invite them to the election, and right after that to forget. No, we are actually, you, the statesmen, are the representative of these people who sincerely came to the poll stations and voted for you. So it's not fair to neglect them and neglect their rights. They have seen, but they will react towards whatever you are doing and you are saying. And if you are lying, they will understand what is right and what is lies.
That's all right.
So it's good for the candidates and those who have been actually elected and the president-elect to be careful of what he said. And at the time, I think prior to that, at the time of the campaigns, they had to be that careful not to say something that they are unable to do.
The promises that are not practiced.
Yeah.
This is unfortunately what we see in all the debates and, all around the world.
As Islam wants and folk and emphasizes, and even the leader of the Islamic Ummah and the late leader, they all emphasize on the involvement of people in different aspects and think people and consider them as trustworthy. In case they have a problem, they should come clearly in front of the people and explain to them, this was what I told you, and this is the problem that I'm facing. Whatever they are saying, this transparency that I'm talking about is not something that actually is against the security, national security of the government and the national security of the Ummah.
This is what the leader has also emphasized, that the candidates and then the president-elect has to, you know, ask for administering social justice, combating corruption, or, for example, strengthening domestic production, which is now, right now, in Islamic Republics of
the
Iran,
immediate need of the people.
Yeah, immediate need of the people is that. And we know that we are under sanctions. So what is important is this believing in this domestic power. I think the president has to believe in this domestic power of the people very much. And domestic production. The case is that somehow overtrust on the foreign powers will make us neglectful of the powers inside.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very important. You know, from the other side, the international interactions with the other countries are also approved by the whole system of Iran. Sometimes people think that, okay, we have to cut our ties with the world, but this is not true.
We are not
an island.
Very true. With regard to what you said, in avoiding the imports that actually damaging the economy of the Islamic Ummah, actually, this is among the priority of those who actually want to focus on the power of the people inside and strengthening the domestic economy. So this is one aspect that they have to, because we have, based on the statistics, the country is being damaged economically through the unlawful imports from other countries for the products that we have inside.
Yes.
So this is very important. As for equality and justice, we should not look at it as a motto and a slogan, because this has to be sensed by people. So it should show its, results in the society. We have to see that the unemployment rate is decreasing. We have to see that the people's, actually, welfare is increasing. These are the things that people can easily judge about.
Okay, that's all right. Said Mohsen Naqvi, any final points, any final comment? Thank you much, brother Ali Alavian. And Said Mohsen Naqvi, we hope that the next president or the then president of the Islamic Republic of Iran is successful, is implementing his programs, and power is really deceiving, brothers, brothers.
Very true.
You know, we could see that at the early Islam, we had so many loyal people and companion to Prophet Muhammad and Imam Ali who were deceived by a penny, who were deceived by a dirham, okay? Just for one dirham. We could see what happened in Karbala tragedy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The people that were looking only for the mundane life. Those people who take the power in Islamic lands, you have to take a lot about the position you have, about the lawful means that you have, and try not to be deceived by the traps of this world, and be loyal to the people, and be loyal to the vote that the people, we can say, gave to you in the polling stations and the voting system of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode. Visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, also YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman.
The subcontinent.
Hello everyone, this is Mehdi and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. Our program aims to address important issues in the subcontinent which affect the governments, people, organizations and the region as a whole. We will try to explain the issues, break down controversies surrounding them and try to have some external perspectives from experts and people.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we are going to talk about the speculations over the future of Bangladesh's relations with the Israeli regime and its national repercussions. And we shall take a look at the efforts by the United States to establish greater military presence in Pakistan following the withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Recently, the Bangladeshi government made some seemingly bureaucratic modifications about Israel. It created such an outrage, or at least bafflement, that prompted the country's foreign ministry to reiterate that there is no change in travel policy towards Tel Aviv. However, given the recent developments inside the occupied territories, it might have been a test run to pilot the idea of formal diplomatic ties and see the feedback, because the wobbly new Israeli administration is in desperate need of a win.
A recent move by the Bangladeshi government to remove a clause from its electronic passports that barred its nationals from traveling to the Israeli-occupied territories has created uproar about the prospects of normalizing ties with the regime. Although Dhaka says nothing has changed in its stance or foreign policy about the Israeli regime, the controversial decision shocked the Muslim nation, especially because lately Israel is under global condemnation for its recent war against the Palestinian people. Speculations over opening diplomatic ties with Israel have not been uncommon following a U.S.-sponsored deal for Arab-Israeli normalization. Since the agreement, Washington and its allies have stepped up their efforts to force more and more countries to establish relations with the Israeli regime. The UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan have already established diplomatic and economic relations, while reports suggest that some other Persian Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, and even Pakistan may be also weighing their options regarding formal ties.
Removing the Accept Israel clause from the e-passports came as a shocking betrayal to the nation, but was greatly welcomed by the Israeli regime, which used the opportunity to call for formal relations with the Muslim country. Bangladesh says its position has not changed, and Dhaka would never recognize Israel until Palestine is established as an independent and sovereign country free of any occupation forces. So why did they move to facilitate relations? Why did they do it without telling people? And was the government hiding its ties from the nation?
Since Bangladesh's independence from Pakistan in 1971, the Muslim country has only recognized Palestine as a state, and the older Bangladeshi passports used to bear the sentence, "This passport is valid for all the countries of the world except Israel." In January last year, Bangladesh was among the first in South Asia and the 119th in the world to introduce the e-passport, a travel document with a small integrated circuit or chip embedded in the cover or pages. 6 months ago, when the South Asian country rolled out its new e-passport, the phrase was removed without any public announcement, and the information came to light only when Israeli officials started hailing Dhaka's move to lift the travel ban on Israel. Bangladesh's Home Minister Asaduzzaman Khan Kamal soon after acknowledged the change, saying that his government removed the words to ensure that the passports meet international standards. Foreign Minister A.K. Abdul Momin said, "The passport is just an identity and it doesn't reflect the foreign policy of a country." He said although Tel Aviv approached Dhaka for recognition and building bilateral ties on several occasions, Bangladesh's policy is still that of the father of the nation. Bangabandhu Sheikh Mujib, Bangladesh never recognizes Israel as long as Palestine is not established as a sovereign state free on any occupation army.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Dr. Sadr Abu Maryam, Secretary General of Palestine Foundation of Pakistan. Welcome to the program, sir. And recently, Bangladesh has dropped the Accept Israel phrase from its passports, but the country's foreign ministry says there is no change in policy towards Tel Aviv. What's your take on this?
Thank you very much for this opportunity to talk with you regarding the issue of Bangladesh and Israel normalization. First of all, I would like to say that Bangladesh is a South Asian country. A majority have Muslim people, Muslim majority country, fourth Muslim majority country in the Islamic and Muslim world. In 1971, the Bangladesh has openly affirmed its position on pro-Palestinian cause. But still, their government, all of the successor governments of the Mujibur Rahman, they are following the same rules, same policy, which they adopted in 1971. Founding leader of Bangladesh, Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, had taken a strong pro-Palestine stance, which was followed by all the successors till now, Sheikh Hasina-led government. But such a sudden decision that came at time when Bangladesh is marking its golden jubilee, the 50 years of their country celebrations. This is a bad news. This is a very bad news for pro-Palestinian factors inside the Bangladesh. Especially they announced that the country passport will no longer bear the tax except Israel for the new passport printing. It is very bad news for pro-Palestinian factors inside the Bangladesh, because you know that our Bangladeshi people, especially Muslims, they have their faith, they have their religious, they have their humanitarian, and all of the aspects. They have relations with the oppressed people of Palestine, and especially they have some sentiments, religious sentiments regarding the Holy Al-Aqsa and Quds al-Sharif.
Now, what happens if Bangladesh starts formal diplomatic ties with the Israeli regime, and what would be the reaction of about 150 million Bangladeshi Muslims?
Yes. As I told you earlier in the question, that the Bangladesh is the fourth Muslim populated country. You are also saying that 150 million Muslims. Yes, I think that the Muslims of Bangladesh will not accept these kinds of developments and the decisions. And it will not be accepted by the Bangladeshi Muslims. They will resist against the government, and I think they must resist to against these kinds of decisions. As I have many friends in Bangladesh, and last night and today, I also spoke with them and discussed with them the same issue. And I tried to get their consent regarding the same subject, and I found that people of Bangladesh will never keep silent if the Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina-led government, would be normalized with Israel. I think if Bangladesh will normalize with Israel, so maybe political instability begin inside the country. As we know that the people of Bangladesh have their religious faith, have the humanitarian faith, and many other aspects and relations with the land of messengers, Palestine, especially with the oppressed people of Palestine, and what is happening in Palestine, they are witnessing, they are observing everything, and we saw that in last 11 days war, recently war of 11 days between Palestinian resistance and Zionist regime. The Bangladeshi people, the Muslims, they have supported Palestinian cause. They chanted the slogan in the streets. So I believe that Bangladesh, Muslims of Bangladesh, people of Bangladesh, will never accept these kinds of decision, and they will must resist.
Could you tell us how can the West pressure Bangladesh into opening relations with Israel?
Yes, this is an interesting question. We know very well that the West Western regimes, Western countries, and Western government, especially the U.S. and European governments, they always giving the opportunity to the monarchs, to the rulers of the Muslim and third world countries. They give them opportunities for how? They maybe United States and Western countries and Western government maybe give any opportunity to Bangladesh to trade with some European countries, some other, and maybe they can enhance this kind of trade which is already exists, and maybe United States guarantee to Sheikh Hasina that she will be prime minister for next tenure. So these kind of things, I think they will persuade with Bangladesh by offering economic packages and other such things than just the Bangladesh politics and intelligence agencies are already at the mercy of India. They are linked with Indian government, and India is a major enemy for Pakistan. So to can Western country through India put the pressure on Bangladesh, because Bangladesh has a good relation with India, and India is in the ties of United States and Israel at the same time. So I, in my opinion, the West maybe use Indian government as a tool to pressurize and to make the possible for Bangladesh to normalize with Zionist regime of Israel. The role of the Western world and India is also seen as an integral part of the process of changing words from Bangladeshi passport.
Now, do you think Bangladesh is going to normalize relations with Israel?
Yes, I think they are ready to normalize with Israel, but the people's stance is different. The government, the changing of the words from the passport of Bangladesh, it is the big and strongest proof that the government of Bangladesh is going slowly with normalization to Israel. But their hurdle is that the ideological boundaries would not allow them to do it. If they will do it, they will see the public awakening.
Thank you, Dr. Abu Mayyam, for your precious time. Now let's see how the people on social media see the situation.
Tiru Ibn Kazuma has reiterated the official stance by the Bangladeshi government, but believes it can be the very first step toward Israeli normalization. Dr. Sanar Khan says dropping the phrase practically means lifting travel bans to the occupied territories, which means ignoring the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians. Ali Masum has underlined the timing of the decision by Dhaka, noting that it is a step towards accepting the Israeli regime. This account has called the Bangladeshi government traitors because of their betrayal to the Palestinian people and cause.
You're listening to the Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to the Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
The United States is set to remove its military forces from Afghanistan, and the deadline is September 11th. So Washington is trying hard to find a safe foothold in the region and what seems more feasible than the nearby friend Pakistan. However, the Pakistani government has said it wouldn't allow the U.S. to establish military bases across the border in Pakistan after the troops withdrawal.
According to an agreement signed between the United States and Taliban in Qatar's Doha, Washington should withdraw all American and NATO troops from Afghanistan. But to provide security for the U.S. interests and gather intelligence in Afghanistan, the U.S. needs to remain its forces close by. Pakistan seems a very plausible option, but there are many obstacles in the road. The Pakistani government is against any such ideas, and on the other hand, the hypothetical military bases would be so close to Afghanistan that Taliban would not accept it as leaving the country. Although many believe that Islamabad is unlikely to sign off on any U.S. strikes against the Taliban that are launched from a base in Pakistan, some believe Pakistan wants to allow U.S. access to a base if it can control how it is used.
The public opinion in Pakistan has been strongly against any renewed presence by the United States, and the government says it won't allow it. But there are many reported similar cases that the U.S. used bases in Pakistan and the government denied it. There is a sad joke that says the most common species of bird in Pakistan's sky is an American drone. And let's not forget that the U.S.-Taliban agreement happened because of Pakistan, without whose active support, Taliban leaders may have never even reached the negotiating table. Therefore, the initial rejection of U.S. bases may be part of Pakistan's bargaining strategy for more gains.
Pakistan has a history of covertly giving military bases to the U.S. Giving the U.S. a military base in the southwestern Balochistan province will have far-reaching political, diplomatic, and security implications for Pakistan and the entire region. In the 1960s, Pakistan denied giving the Peshawar Bedarbar Air Base to the U.S. until Russia shot down a surveillance plane that took off from it. The government also denied access to the Shamsi Air Base until a U.S.-led clash killed 24 Pakistani soldiers in 2011, when Pakistan expelled U.S. forces. Agreeing can cause severe backlash from the people, who are highly antagonistic towards the American war in Afghanistan, but refusing may mean getting further from U.S. and further isolation. Such a move by Islamabad can lead to more pressure through multilateral institutions such as the International Monetary Fund and the Financial Action Task Force. Moreover, the U.S. may be able to use it to shift the blame of its failures in Afghanistan on Pakistan, which was among the most significant factors behind the U.S.-Taliban Accord.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Sabina Siddiqui, foreign affairs journalist. Now, Mr. Siddiqui, the Pakistani government has said it wouldn't allow the U.S. to establish military bases across the border in Pakistan after the troops withdraw. Do you think Islamabad can resist such a demand if Washington insists on it?
It's like become a national security issue now, and the Taliban have threatened that any country that gives bases to the U.S. is going to be attacked by them and will be considered an enemy country as well. So consequently, Pakistan has categorically refused to give bases, and there's no more room left for that. No compromise is possible, as it is a national security matter for Pakistan itself now. However, Pakistan is actively engaged in the Afghan peace process, and negotiations are continuing, and Islamabad is trying its best to establish a successful peace process.
What happens if Imran Khan changes his decision and allows Washington to use Pakistan as a backup base when the American forces leave Afghanistan?
Well, the official statement has already been released. There's really no room left to change for the PM to change his mind, as the Taliban are openly threatening us, and not only us, I guess they are. It's an open threat for anybody, any country, any neighboring country which gives them a base. So there are very few choices left. Plus, you see, Pakistan is also trying to mediate in a way between the Afghan government and the Taliban. And the process is continuing right now. Let's hope for the best. Maybe we have a positive outcome from that.
Now, will Taliban agree to continuous deals with the U.S. in case Washington manages to set up military bases in Pakistan?
Well, now, it depends more on how Washington deals with the matter, and I think they are doing their best. And I don't think civil war in the country suits the Taliban's interests or the Afghan government or even the U.S. So let's hope that better sense prevails and no such thing happens. Otherwise, that would be total chaos in the region.
Taliban has recently announced that Turkish forces must withdraw their troops as part of the deal with the U.S. for pullout of foreign forces. What does this say about the future of the country?
Well, it's I have been reading tweets a lot on Twitter from both sides. The Turkish side seems quite hopeful, quite optimistic that they will be able to hold on after the U.S. forces leave, as they are saying that they have never been attacked by the Afghans before. And there are Afghan accounts on Twitter threatening the Turks directly. But one doesn't know if they are genuine IDs or whatever. So it's a very fluid situation. It's very unpredictable. Maybe they can pull it off. Let's hope the Afghan peace process is completed satisfactorily before the U.S. forces leave, and the situation should be calm and there would be no such problem, I think. Then the mood will be better, and the Turkey seems to want a role. Maybe Istanbul is communicating with the Afghans behind the scenes. I don't think that can be ruled out either.
Now, will Islamabad eventually let the United States set up bases in Pakistani territory after their pullout from Afghanistan? And what does it mean for the U.S.-Pakistan relations?
Well, we have already refused. And as for the U.S.-Pak relations, our bilateral relations are there since decades. And it's not just about Afghanistan. We have a viable ties in many other sectors and areas, such as trade. And then there is, Pakistan has a certain geostrategic value. And I don't think Washington would ignore, but the ties will continue satisfactorily. There may be, it's already happened, we have refused. So that is done. And the ties are still intact. So I guess we have survived.
Thank you, Mrs. Siddiqui, for being on the program. Now let's see how the people have reacted on social media and cyberspace.
Asaf Bai has reflected the sentiments of the Pakistani people about the U.S. war in Afghanistan. Ahmed has criticized the use of assassinations drones from the Pakistani territory, asking the government to cooperate with other countries towards peace and not more wars. Abdullah Khan is of the opinion that allowing U.S. bases may have constructive consequences for Pakistan if the country can have some sort of control over its activities. Ali Awan is a firm believer that Islamabad will not eventually bow to U.S. pressure and host military bases in its territories.
And that was our episode on the speculations over the future of relations between Bangladesh and Israel, as well as the U.S. efforts to get Islamabad's go-ahead for military bases in Pakistan following the pullout from Afghanistan. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take care.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe,